welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden era. Mark Levone, you're your host for this hour of mystery. Later on, from Jack Webb of Dragnet fame on Johnny Madero, Pier 23. But first, it's yours truly, Johnny Dollar, with the Bayou Body Matter from November 15th, 1959 on CBS.
Johnny Dollar.
Earl Poorman, Johnny, down here in Sarasota.
Earl, some heard of these days, to say nothing of the fishing.
Now listen.
I'm listening.
You remember how my home is situated out here on St. Armand's Key?
Well, sure, I ought to. I've been there often enough.
It's near the end of a long bayou that comes in from Sarasota Bay.
Yeah, and the bayou is lined with expensive homes, private docks, and it's full of mullets, sea trout, sheep's head, flounder. So what about it?
Johnny, what would you think if I told you I'd sold a man $50,000 worth of straight life insurance?
Well, I think you were just doing your normal... Huh? Did you call to talk fishing or business?
Listen, will you?
Okay. What would I think if you sold a man a $50,000 policy? And?
And then, 3 days later, just this morning, as a matter of fact, found his body floating under my dock.
Oh. Okay, Earl. I think I'd better grab the first plane I can.
That's what I think.
And not to go fishing.
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Tri-State Life and Casualty Insurance Company, Sarasota office. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Bayou Body matter. Expense account, item 1, $73.50, plane fare and incidentals, Hartford to Tampa, Florida. There I'd figured on getting a ferry plane to Sarasota, but instead Earl Poorman met me at the International Airport with his car.
Oh, Johnny, I'm glad you got down here so quickly. You realize I only phoned you about 5 hours ago?
Yeah, Earl, I just finished my breakfast.
Matter of fact, I called you before I even contacted the police.
Then you probably aren't sure whether it was natural death or suicide or what, huh?
We'll find out what the police have found out when we get to Sarasota. You ask me, though, I think the old man simply went out on his dock this morning, had a heart attack, keeled over, and by the time he floated down to my place, he was dead.
Who was he?
Well, his name, Johnny, is Ralph P. Carter. He lived in the fourth home up the bayou from mine.
That new place that was just being built the last time I was down here?
That's the one. He was a man of 64. Used to live in New York, where he had a business of some kind. But he had some heart trouble, so he quit and came down here to live and take it easy.
Pretty well to do.
Considering the house he put up, the way he and his wife lived, I'd say he was loaded. Matter of fact, I happen to know he was. Fancy car, private dock, nice
speedboat. Has a wife, you say?
Yes.
Uh-huh. How old is she, Earl?
About 50.
You know what I was thinking, of course.
What?
Oh, if he'd been married to some much younger gal and having money and some insurance, what do you know?
You were thinking his wife had knocked him over to collect on this policy I sold him?
Such things have happened, Earl.
Well, it didn't this time for several reasons.
One.
He already owned a couple of other policies issued by some company up north. Big ones, totaling over $200,000. Two, both he and his wife have so much in blue chip stock, so much in the bank that... Well, that $200,000 won't mean a thing to her.
Funny, then, that he should buy $50,000 more from you.
Third, Carter's wife never knew about this policy I sold him.
Oh?
No. Nor is she named as beneficiary of it.
Who is?
Hold your hat, Johnny. This is right out of the pulp magazines.
What do you mean?
The beneficiary happens to be a former stripper.
Stripper? You mean for burlesque?
That's exactly what I mean. Her name is Mitzi Taylor. She lives up in New York.
I see. You know the connection, Earl?
Well, from what he told me when he bought the policy, well, I guess he'd known her pretty well in the old days, before he and his present wife got married. They were only married about 3 years ago, incidentally.
Incidentally, huh?
Well, what's that mean?
Earl, I got a kind of funny idea cooking in the back of my head. About his wife, I mean.
About his wife?
Yeah, let's get on down to Sarasota and find out what the police have learned. The police police hadn't wasted any time. After recovering the body from the bayou, they'd immediately turned it over to the coroner, Dr. Phillips. Sergeant Edwards, who was in charge of the case, made us cool our heels until the coroner could finish his preliminary examinations.
But why an autopsy, Sergeant? You mean you suspect foul play, something like that? He was alone. He was unattended when he died, Mr. Pullman. That means an autopsy is mandatory.
Oh.
Hey, tell me this, Sergeant. Do you yourself have any reason to be suspicious of how Mr. Carter may have died?
You don't mind, sir. I'd rather wait until Dr. Phillips is through before we talk about it.
Which means you did find something suspicious.
I didn't say that, sir.
Well, you might just as well have. Did you talk to Mrs. Carter?
No, sir.
What?
It happens she isn't home.
Then she doesn't know her husband is dead?
Looks that way, doesn't it?
Oh, come on. Now, wait a minute. Sergeant, that's a pretty evasive answer.
Truth is, Mr. Dollar, it was meant to be.
Oh, great, great. Then I can expect a lot of cooperation from this department.
All we can possibly give you, sir, when we find out what we have to go on.
Yeah. Earl, do you know if Carter had a regular physician?
Yeah, Dr. Theo Foote, Johnny.
We've checked with him, Mr. Dollar.
And?
Mr. Carter's heart condition was such that he was ready to go at any moment, and without warning.
What if you're suspicious of something else?
Have I given you any real reason to be suspicious?
Now, look, Sergeant, let's not
Dr. Phillips.
Johnny Dollar.
Hiya, Doc.
I might have known you'd be called in on this, Johnny. You certainly got down here in a hurry. Mr. Pullman.
Hello, Coroner.
Did you find out anything, Doctor?
You were right, Sergeant. I've got a lot more work to do, of course, before making out my report on this case, but there's no question about it. Mr. Carter died neither from a heart attack nor from drowning.
Oh? What did kill him, Doc?
He was struck so hard at the base of the skull that death must have been instantaneous.
Murder, Johnny.
And without question, the murder weapon was the wrought iron poker that you found there in his home.
No reason for suspicion, Sergeant?
Thanks, Doctor. I'll get out an APB on Mrs. Carter right away.
I think you'd better.
And, Mr. Dollar, I'm afraid you'll just have to wait around until we pick her up.
You, want to bet on that?
And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Bayou Body Matter.
Operation, Mr. Dollar, and as soon as we get any word as to the whereabouts of Mrs. Carter, we'll let you know.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Earl, just how much did you know about Carter and his wife?
Well, you know how it is, Johnny. There was some talk about their not getting along too well, but...
I've thoroughly investigated, Mr. Dollar. They fought like cats and dogs.
Well, now, I wouldn't go so far as to say that.
At times, that is. At times. According to the people next door, they had quite an argument just last night.
Oh?
At one time, according to these people, she hollered at him, "I could kill you, Ralph. I could kill you."
Yeah, well, that's not proof that she did.
No? Then why would she say it?
Haven't you ever told somebody you'd like to kill him?
Well, saying I'd like to or saying I could or would are two different things. And look here, sir. If she didn't do it, then why would she hightail it out of town early this morning?
All those neighbors reported that she did?
Yes, sir. She drove away from their place at approximately the same time as the coroner says he was killed.
Well, let's face it, Johnny. The sergeant must be right. She must have done it.
No question about it, Mr. Dollar.
But why? What could her motive have been?
Who knows? Could have been most anything. Now that we know there was friction between them...
And what about his money? She stands to be worth an awful lot with him out of the way. And don't you forget for one minute, she's much younger than he was. Not only that, but she's a nice, healthy, attractive woman, too. And he, with his heart condition... Well, he was probably just a millstone around her neck.
Makes sense, Johnny.
Sure it does.
Did you or the coroner find any fingerprints on that poker that was used on him?
No, sir. But there was some lint from a pair of cotton gloves on it.
All right, then.
Johnny.
All right.
I've seen Mrs. Carter many times. She prides herself on her dress. She can afford to. And I've never seen her outside that house without a hat and without a pair of gloves. And, of course, a lot of people wear gloves when they drive
a
car.
Okay, okay.
Now, don't you worry, Mr. Dollar. The APB is out, and every highway north of Bradenton, south of Venice, and east of Arcadia is being watched for. When we get out, I'll let you know.
Yeah, you do that. Come on, Earl, let's have some lunch.
Sure. Nothing more we can do here.
Reach you at Mr. Pullman's house, I take it.
Don't bank on it, Sergeant. So Earl drove me to his home on St. Armand's Key, and by then I was beginning to wish I'd made the trip to Florida solely for purposes of fishing the blue waters of the Gulf with him. But then after saying hello to his charming wife and having a drink and a good lunch with them, I walked over to the Carter place, 100 yards or so up the bayou. Much to my surprise, there was no policeman there to keep an eye on things in case Mrs. Carter should return. I was even more surprised to find a side door standing wide open. So, needless to say, I walked in and looked around. One of the first things that caught my eye in a den off the living room was a desk. It was locked, but I managed to pry it open without too much difficulty. And there, among other things, kind of half hidden away in a folder, I found some canceled checks, a whole series of them, written twice a year for a period of over 3 years. They were made out to Mitzi Taylor, the ex-Burley Queen. Pretty sizable checks, too, all for the same amount of money. No wonder he'd kept this desk locked. But during one period of time, well, three checks that should have been there were missing. And it gave me an idea. Out in the living room was another desk, a tambour, obviously Mrs. Carter's. Hidden away in the bottom of one of the drawers of that desk were the three missing checks. Huh?
I beg your pardon.
Mrs. Carter?
That's right. Who are you?
Johnny Dollar, special investigator for one of your husband's insurance companies.
Special investigator?
Yeah, here. My credentials.
I see. And has my husband sent for you?
Your husband?
Of course. Where is he?
You mind telling me where you've been since early this morning, Mrs. Carter?
I don't know why not. I was somewhat upset this morning, and, well, being a woman, I chose to do something a man probably wouldn't understand. I've been at a beauty parlor.
Where?
Just this side of Bradenton.
Hi, now, Mrs. Carter.
And if this is some kind of inquisition, I had a shampoo, a set, and a manicure.
Tell me just one thing. Did you leave this house before or after your husband died?
I don't believe Ralph was even up by the time. Ralph, dead.
His body was found in the bayou this morning. Or did you know that?
Oh, I am shocked, Mr. Dollar. Terribly shocked. I am not sorry.
Go on, Mrs. Carter.
I married Ralph 3 years ago. It was my second marriage. My first husband, though very wealthy, was a... I don't know why I'm telling you this.
Go on, please.
I thought that Ralph, because he was older than I would... Well, I thought that with my money, he'd be content to settle down to the quiet sort of home life I'd owe. But don't you see, it was only for my money that he married me. The only woman he ever cared about, whom he continued to support with my money, was a horrible... See, you've been through my desk.
Yes.
I'd known about her for some time, Mr. Dollar. But yesterday, when I found those checks in his desk...
Would you call them motive for murder, Mrs. Carter?
I told him I would divorce him. I told him last night. I'm afraid it was quite a scene, but I... Good heavens.
All right, now listen carefully. I want you to answer my questions carefully, regardless of how absurd you may think they are.
Well, all right.
You always wear gloves, don't you?
What? Well, of course.
This kind of gloves, like you're wearing now?
Only this kind. I have them made for me in France and sent to me on special order.
Even when you're working in the garden, say?
Of course. I save the old ones for that kind of thing. Any other kind of cotton or wool or domestic leather I'm allergic to. But, Mr. Dollar, I don't understand
why...
Such
a little thing, and yet...
What?
And yet murder cases have been solved on a whole lot less.
Murder? Did you say murder?
So you found her for us, Dollar.
Oh, Sergeant Edwards.
So maybe you private dicks do have some value after all. All right, Mrs. Carter.
Yes, Sergeant.
I'm arresting you on suspicion of murdering your husband.
You what? Now, just a minute,
may as well
man.
Go along with him, Mrs. Carter.
But Mr. Dollar,
but I'm glad you threw that word suspicion in there, Sergeant.
What's that?
Yeah, it may save you from being sued for a lot of money.
Huh?
Yeah. For false arrest.
And now, Act Three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
After getting the address of Missy Taylor from him, I persuaded Earl Palmer to drive me in a hurry to the airport up in Tampa. Item 2, 6795, plane fare to New York. It was very late by the time I arrived there, but item 3, $6 for a taxi to the neighborhood of Mitzi's apartment. Item 4, 10 cents for a phone call. And then I crossed my fingers. This was hardly the scientific approach to the solution of a murder case. I wouldn't get to first base if I had to identify myself over the phone. But she gave me a break.
Hello?
Mitzi?
Yeah, that's right. This is... Louis?
Yeah.
Louie.
What's the matter with you? Why are you talking like that?
Gotta keep my voice down.
Listen, didn't I tell you not to call me from down there in Florida? Come right back here. Louie, are you back here in New York already?
Took a plane.
To take care of Ralph Carter.
Don't worry, baby. It'll be in all the papers.
Okay. Come on over here and I'll pay you off.
Sure.
But then you're to clear out. You're to get out of this town as far away from me as you can.
Sure.
Okay. Come on over.
Yeah, a real break. Now it was up to me to take the fullest possible advantage of it. Item 5, another dime for another phone call. This time to Lieutenant Randy Singer at the 18th Precinct.
Well, no question about it, Johnny. Old man Carter must have known that sooner or later his wife would catch on to all the money he's been giving his dame.
Right.
And maybe he was getting tired of sending out those checks.
Right. So to get off the hook and still provide for Mitzi, he named her as beneficiary to a $50,000 insurance policy. Sure, his wife would know about it after he died, but she wouldn't be able to do anything about it.
Yeah, but little Mitzi just couldn't wait, huh?
Now, look, I don't anticipate any trouble with her, Randy, but if you're going to be around for a while, well, after I've wrapped it all up, I'll call you to come over and make the arrest, huh?
Seems to me you have got it all wrapped up.
Sit tight, Randy, and I'll call you.
Yeah, who is it?
Louis.
Louis, huh?
You mind if I come in, Mitzi?
Now, who are you?
Johnny Dollar, special investigator.
Yeah? For who?
The company that issued that $50,000 policy you are not going to collect on.
You know something, Johnny? That's where you're wrong.
Oh, you think so?
Did you see Ralph Carter's body floating around in that bayou down there in Florida?
I'm afraid I didn't.
Well, you should have, Johnny. Because then you'd know what you're going to look like floating down the dirty East River.
Sorry, Mitzi, but... Hey, wait a minute. How did you know Carter's body was thrown into the bayou?
You took too long getting over here, Johnny, after that phony phone call. Come on in, Louie. Take care of him.
What?
One move for a gun and I blow your head off, mister. Go ahead, Mitzi. Take his gun away.
Okay, got it.
Now keep it on him while I take him apart so we can feed the fish up in that river.
No, wait a minute.
Huh?
Wait till I close the door to the corridor so that... What?
That's right, Mitzi. Don't bother.
Cops! The cops!
Drop it, Louie!
Okay, boys. Take what's left of them out of here.
Right, Lieutenant.
Maybe you better put some cuffs on the dame.
Right. Come on, baby.
Hiya, Johnny. Fancy meeting you here.
Very funny.
And, hey, what happened? I thought you were going to call me back.
Oh, stop hamming it up, will you, Randy? But, thanks.
Think nothing of it.
Louis managed to survive, and I understand that the way he shut up his mouth in the hospital, well, I understand he pretty much cinched the case against both himself and Mitzi. So, expense account total, including a big midnight supper for Randy and myself and a train back to Hartford, $168.65. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now, here's our star to tell you about next week's story.
Well, next week I take another trip to Florida, and I still don't get a chance to go fishing. Instead, a lesson in how not to commit a murder. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Lillian Bayef, Dick Perrin, Sam Edwards, Barney Phillips, Herb Bigren, and Frank Gerstle. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Dan Coverley speaking.
This is the CBS Radio Network. take our liberty. Gentlemen, your attention, please. Now, here's the problem. Your pilot is flying a 400,000-pound, 650-mile-per-hour B-52D Stratofortress. Now, with the weather, wind, and bomb load information provided on your test sheet, I want you to figure your estimated time of arrival at point X on the map, 2,109 miles away.
Quite a knotty problem, isn't it? But not for the fledgling navigators in U.S. Air Force aviation cadet training. You see, these men have a firm background in astronavigation, electronics, engineering, and allied fields. They are eminently prepared to cope with the most intricate navigational situations. College men between 19 and 26 and a half. Find out today if you can qualify as an Air Force navigator. If so, you're in for a prestige position with a brilliant future. See your local Air Force recruiter today.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 15th of November, 1959 on CBS. You're listening to An Hour of Mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. We now turn to Jack Webb, who made the famous radio, then TV show Dragnet, in one of his several detective-style roles on radio in Johnny Madero, Pier 23. It was about a year before this next broadcast that Jack Webb started to sculpt his on-air persona with the character of Pat Novak for Hire, with his memorable delivery and, at times, even more memorable one-liners. That sort of character and style would set him up for future radio episodes of Jeff Regan, Investigator, Pete Kelly's Blues, and, of course, Dragnet. Let's hear him now as Johnny Madero in this episode called Find Pete Sutro from June 18, 1947 on the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Yeah, I'm Johnny Madero, Pier 23. You know, the only time San Francisco really gets hot is when a tourist calls it Frisco, and then it gets warm enough to give a sleigh dog a southern accent. Down around the waterfront, they don't care so much. And for a buck, you can insult anybody but Joe DiMaggio. The piers stretch out like a big yawn from south of the ferry building clear to the China docks. You pushed over on one side so you won't notice about the same spot you'll find dust in a bride's parlor. You find Pier 23. From there, it's a short skip to Johnny Madero's boat shop. My place. The sign outside looks honest, but down here, the only sign people pay any attention to is rigor mortis. I rent boats and do anything else you can blame on your environment. It works out all right. But pretty soon word gets around and you got a reputation. But it doesn't pay to argue, because even if you're leveling, you make as much headway as a whistler with a split lip. I found that out last Wednesday afternoon. I was looking out the window watching the tide come in when somebody in back of me coughed. When I turned, Nat Finley was standing there in the office. He didn't say anything for a minute, and you noticed his eyes were as soft as the inside of a woman's arm. They had one of those faraway looks you couldn't follow with a road map. And then I saw the rest of him. He wasn't flabby, but he was on the way. And you got the idea he was an ex-fighter who settled down with a restaurant.
I got the right place, haven't I?
If a woman screams you haven't, what's on your mind?
That's a good question, Madero. That's a good question. That's what I want you to find out.
Look, fella, maybe I don't even want to be friendly. What's on your mind?
I don't know, Madero. I don't know.
All right, you convinced me. Now back out of here and we'll both be in the dark. Huh?
Well, wait a minute, Madero. Listen to me. My name is Nat Finley. My wife and I live up on Knob Hill, and I've been retired for a while, see? And...
I don't, but go ahead.
Well, you got to help me, Madero. I'll pay you $50 a day to help me.
At that price, it won't be help.
I want you to find someone for me, but I don't know who or why yet.
We're back to that again, huh?
Oh, listen to me. Lately, a name has been ringing in my ears. Just a name. Pete Sutro. Pete Sutro. Over and over again.
So you read it somewhere.
I don't know where I picked it up. For the last week, the name Pete Sutro has been on my mind. It's a nightmare. You got to do something about it, Madero.
Change your diet. That might help.
I want you to find Pete Sutro. Find out who he is, where he is, why he's bothering me. If you do, I'll give you a $200 bonus.
Look, Finley, is this a job or a career? There must be a dozen Sutros from here to Jersey City.
Maybe, but the Pete Sutro I want lives right here in this town. He's got to.
There's a law?
Listen to me, Madero. Last night, I kept hearing the name Sutro again. Only this time, there was an address, too. It was care of General Delivery, San Francisco. So he's got to be somewhere in this town.
Why don't you check the phone book?
I have, and the city directory, too. But so far, I haven't been able to locate him.
And I will, huh?
Well, if you don't, you're still getting $50 a day. What are you worried about?
That $50 a day? It might turn out to be a dream, too. You better throw in some advance money.
Sure, Madero. I brought a check along, just in case. Will $100 cover your doubts?
Yeah, if the bank can cover your check.
If they can't, you don't have to do the job. That fair enough?
Mm-hmm.
Will you start looking right away?
Yeah.
But you gotta be careful, Madero. My wife's never to know about this, understand?
Why?
Because, well, she doesn't like the idea. She thinks I'm a little crazy looking for a name like this. She hates me, I think. She thinks I'm crazy.
Don't worry about her, Finley, until she starts mixing your nightcaps. For $50 a day, I'll chase anybody's dream. Because with that kind of dough, you're rich enough to run down a couple of your own. When Finley left, I called the bank and found out his check had solid backing. So I went down to Lofty's and I put out some feelers on Pete Sutro. It didn't take long before one of the boys came up with the lead. A couple of other people were looking for Sutro, too. One was a guy named Marty Kane. The other was a torch singer named Evelyn Day. The word was that Sutro and Evelyn used to trade mash notes in Detroit. Well, I phoned the Jade Club where Evelyn was working, but she wasn't due for an hour. So I decided to give Marty Kane first try. He was living in a motel out in the marina, so I went out. There was a sign outside that said Modern Cabins, but you knew Abe Lincoln did better in Illinois. The cabins were the size of an upper berth with enough holes to start a punch board. That didn't leave much privacy. You had more chance of keeping a secret from Mata Hari. I asked the manager where Kane's place was, and he pointed to the end cabin. I went over and knocked on the door. Kane opened it and glared. His eyes were the color of Saturday night on a week-old jag, and he was so chunky you figured he'd be harder to move than an icebox through a basement window.
Who are you?
My name's Madero, Johnny Madero.
Don't rhyme with anything. What are you looking for?
A guy named Pete Sutro. I hear you got the same idea.
So you got ears. I'll invite you in.
Yeah. I can't turn you down.
Yeah, that's what everybody says about this gun. Now sit down, you get me nervous.
Put away the gun and we'll both be calm, huh?
After you tell me what you know about Sutro.
I'm tracking down a dream.
Yours?
A client's. You sound anxious. What's your pitch?
A wild one. Just say he owes me some dough and I need it bad now.
You got the muscles, take in laundry.
I'll put you through the ringer first. I want to lead on Sutro.
Yeah, we both do, but I'm not going down on my knee.
Get up, Madero. I don't want to make a liar out of you again.
Yeah, you're tough, Kane. I'll bet you got your dandruff scared stiff.
Yeah, and I'll start on yours now. What's Sutro to you?
$50 a day. A guy named Nat Finley hired me to track him down. Does that make you happy?
No, just ambitious. Who's Nat Finley?
He came in and paid me to find Sutro. He said the name was giving him nightmares.
Sounds like a bedtime story, Madero.
Well, if you don't like it, jazz it up. It's the truth.
I read the wrong papers. Give me another version.
All right, if you don't believe me, Kane, make up your own. Here's Finley's check. Can you read?
If you'll help me with the big words. Give it here. Nat Finley. Yeah, Nat Finley. You weren't lying. Looks like a good check. I'll take a chance. I'll cash it for you.
It's giving you ideas, huh?
Yeah, and the first one's about you. Here's your dough, Madero. Now get out. Get out quick.
Oh, you're too good to me, Kane. Suppose the check bounces.
It won't, Madero. Because I ain't going to cash it.
Oh, I couldn't figure it. Kane looked at the check and smiled like a guy who just learned all about the atom bomb. I walked out. The only thing I knew for sure was the demand for Pete Sutro was big enough to start a business boom. I headed back to my apartment to see how much lip I could bring down with an ice bag and a little pressure. When I got there, the door was open and the light was on. Inside, things looked even brighter. A brunette was draped over the couch like she paid the first installment on it. She was about 25, with a pair of legs that would have made a silkworm turn over and write a fan letter. She wore a tan business suit, and the way it was rumpled up, you knew office hours were over. When she saw me, she began to vibrate like an alarm clock at 6 a.m.
Good evening.
I won't argue, but you got the wrong room.
Will I regret it?
I don't know you that well.
Oh, you'll catch up with the crowd. My name is Sheila. I'm Nat Finley's wife.
You should be somebody's wife. It cuts down on the risk.
I want to talk to you.
Go ahead. I'll try not to stare.
Let's have a drink first, Mr. Madero. Maybe it will cloud your vision.
Yeah, and the issue, too, huh?
You serve strong stuff, Mr. Madero. Soda?
I'm all charged up now, lady. What's on your mind?
I have a problem. Maybe you can help me.
Maybe it's too late. I'm listening.
It's about my husband, Nat. He tries, but he can't hide much from me.
I'll bet you have the same trouble. Look, lady, you're working too hard for a sale. If you've got a point, make it.
All right, Mr. Madero, we'll skip the intermission. My husband saw you tonight and sold you a wild story.
Yeah, but it paid off. So far, I'm not complaining.
But I am. I want you to drop the whole silly job Nat gave you.
You're not building a case. $50 a day buys a lot of hangover, lady.
You don't understand, Mr. Madero. My husband is a sick man.
Yeah, I know. He can't sleep at night.
He has a large imagination, and it's been getting worse lately. He dreams up things. Sometimes I think he's a little crazy.
Maybe it's a hobby. He can afford it.
There are some things even he can't afford.
Yeah, like finding Pete Sutro.
That's right, Mr. Madero. There is no such man.
A guy named Marty Kane will give you odds.
Who did you say?
Marty Kane. He cashed in your husband's check. Do you know him?
No. No, I never heard of him.
You don't sound so sure. Marty was talking about Sutro.
All right, Mr. Madero. I'm talking about something else now. Money.
So far, you're whispering.
Shouting, Mr. Madero. $500 worth. I'll give you $500 to drop the job and forget everything.
All right, baby. You twisted my arm.
You won't let me down, Mr. Madero. Will you?
If I do, it'll be nice and easy. Finley had the kind of a wife you mate with a panther. She picked up her purse and peeled off 500 fish. She wasn't talking anymore, and when she swayed out, you wondered how much night practice she'd given that rumba. Well, I was all washed up with the Finleys. It felt good already. So did the dough. I felt like a guy whose name was just picked in a chain letter. My mind was free for the better things in life. So I called up a girl out on Van Ness and told her to meet me at the Regent Bowling Alley. I got there before she did, so I started warming up the alley. A few minutes later, it got a lot warmer because Inspector Warcheck of San Francisco Homicide began spoiling my game.
Hello, Madame. It was a nice strike.
You're in the wrong kind of alley, Warcheck. What do you want?
Some pointers. You got time?
No.
I can see how you hold a bowling ball. Now show me how you hold a gun, huh?
All right, Warcheck. What's on your mind?
I was on Marty Kane's.
A guy named Pete Sutro. He owed Kane some money.
And you paid off?
I paid him a visit. We had something in common.
And you must have bored him to death. Kane couldn't quite stand a couple of slugs in his forehead, so he quit.
Well, what do you want me to do, Warcheck? Break the news to his wife?
No. Just tell me about the argument you had.
It was a monologue. Kane wanted to know where Sutro was hiding. I only knew one answer, so he did all the talking.
Oh, you should have said, please. It's not polite to interrupt a guy with a gun.
Look, Warcheck, what makes me the blue plate special?
The motel manager. He said you go into Kane's room, and then he heard a struggle, and then later on he heard a shot.
Did he hear who won the fourth? Listen, copper, a guy named Nat Finley hired me to find out who Pete Sutro was. The name was playing tag in his brain all week, and he wanted to know why.
Dad, does that sound like a story?
Check with Finley. He's the guy who made it up.
What if he lets you down?
And work on his wife. She's not bad looking, and she paid me to drop Finley's account.
I'll check both your alibis, Manero. In the meantime, I want to line you up.
While you're making the rounds, look up a gal named Evelyn Day. She knew Sutro, too.
Go ahead. Run the police force. Tell me what to ask her.
Forget it, Warcheck. You're not the type. Warcheck stood there for a second, wiping his teeth with his tongue. If he'd done it on the outside, it would have been a contract job. And then one of the bowlers in a tight pair of slacks brushed up against him and went out. He looked at me once more and headed after her. Well, I didn't feel much like bowling either, so I left the note at the desk with a girlfriend and started out. I knew I was in trouble. Some days it's harder to duck trouble than a handful of pebbles. Oh, I told myself I didn't kill Kane, but that was like trying to fight a fire with an anti-smoke law. The big question was Pete Sutro. Who was he? There were other questions, like why did the Finley dame buy me off? And why did her husband want Sutro in the first place? Well, there were no answers, and I felt about as safe as an alligator walking through a handbag factory, so I looked up the only good guy I know, a waterfront priest named Father Leahy. I found him in his room, flipping through a couple of raffle books.
Hello, Johnny. You're just in time to buy a ticket. The boys' club is raffling off an electric toaster.
I'm already a little burned, Father.
I'm in a spot, Johnny. The boys gave me a quota to fill. I got stuck at a banker's luncheon all afternoon. You know what they're like on risk.
Yeah.
I've got to sell some tickets.
All right, I'll buy a couple, but I need your help. I'm in trouble.
You'd better buy five. At a time like this, both of us can afford to be generous. What kind of trouble?
This won't take long, Father.
You always say that, but it adds up. You don't realize it, but I lose whole weekends that way.
Will you please listen, Father? Warcheck wants to pin me down on a murder.
He's got the weight. Who's dead?
A guy named Marty Kane. I saw him a couple of hours ago, and he was still alive when I left.
Can you prove it?
Well, that's going to be tough. The clerk at the motel saw me go into Kane's room just before he got tumbled.
So far, you don't have a way out. Why not plead insanity?
I would, but I'm afraid of the competition.
What do you mean?
A muddled-up guy named Nat Finley hired me to chase down the name Pete Sutro. He claimed the name was haunting him.
I know how he feels. Johnny, I don't think the bishop likes me either.
My only lead was Marty Kane. He seemed to want Sutro worse than I did.
Sutro is certainly popular for a dream. Do you think he'll ever materialize?
I don't know, but I don't think Marty Kane was killed over a dream.
If he was, it must have been quite a nightmare. Did you look up your client again?
I didn't have the time. His wife paid me to drop the whole job. She said Finley was a harmless duck with a pail full of wild ideas.
Does the husband feel the same way about his wife?
Do you want gossip, Father, or do you want to help me?
That's an unfair question, Johnny. Either way, I'm embarrassed.
Please, Father, will you check up on a few people for me?
Yes, yes.
Look up Kane's friends, and if you run out of those, try his enemies. Find out who might have had an urge to kill him, will you?
It's a tall order, Johnny. There may be a lot of people involved.
I can use them all, Father.
I know. But can they all use an electric toaster?
When I left Father Leahy, I knew I still had one base to tag. It was Sutro's ex-flame, a doll named Evelyn Day. I drove down to Eddy Street and I parked near the Jade Club. Well, it's not a bad place, but on a slow night, even the winos are afraid to go in. Inside, it was dark enough to hide the decimal point on a check, and over by the bar, there was a piano playing music that nobody was listening to. Then Evelyn came out. And right off, she started hunting for the nearest fire exit. She had red hair about this side of 98 degrees, and she wore a black evening gown that held up by one strap and a prayer. She was the kind of a girl who could wear a Mother Hubbard and make it look like a negligee. And when she sang, it came out low enough to strike oil. After she was through, I asked the bartender to give her a message. She walked over to me, and she wasn't happy one way or the other.
Are you the man who wanted me?
One of them. You're Evelyn, huh?
Yeah. What'll it lead to?
A crisis if you don't sit down.
All right. You've got me interested. Now, what's on your mind that we can talk about?
My name's Madero. Now, let's start with a friend named Pete Sutro.
Let's continue. What do you want to know about him?
Where is he?
Are you a cop, or will you pay for the right answer?
I need too many of them, baby. I'm way out ahead in a murder derby, and I'll pitch homicide anybody I can get.
What do you want Sutro for?
I think he shot Marty Kane.
Someone should have. But you're betting on the wrong horse.
You're prejudiced. Sutro was your boyfriend.
That's right. He was my boyfriend. But I haven't seen him lately.
All right, then. What was the last thing you did with him?
I'll read my diary to you someday.
Now, look, baby, you got a choice. I'm going to rough you up or let the pros do it.
Let go of my Armadero. Or I'll call a bouncer.
Call Sutro. Now start talking before I bruise you up good.
Slow down, Madero. You're out of my weight class.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what you want to know.
Should I take notes or is this going to be quick?
I don't know. Depends on how sentimental I get.
That's all right. I got a handkerchief.
Okay, I'll tell you. I used to be Pete Sutro's girl in Detroit. Then one day he skipped out and left me hanging on the vine.
Don't worry, baby. You haven't withered yet.
I started looking for him and so did Kane.
Why Kane?
He and Pete had a deal together. Pete ran out with all the dough.
Your boy should have run for Congress. He's got a nice record. What kind of a deal did he have with Kane?
I don't remember.
All of a sudden, huh?
I'm shy when it comes to strangers. Let's just end it by saying Pete disappeared.
Let's say you're dummying up.
I love Pete, and I wouldn't want anything to happen to him.
Do you carry a picture with that torch, baby?
Sure. Want to see? Here's a snapshot of Pete in my locket. Do you know him?
Not this season, no.
I want him back. He was a good guy.
Yeah, your boy worked up a lot of people. He made number one nightmare for a guy named Nat Finley.
I heard. And I want to see Finley, too.
You saw me, miss. But I want to talk to Madero.
Hello, Finley.
I got to see you alone, Madero. And I got to see you now.
You lost your option. I'm freelancing again.
Well, you can't walk out on me.
This is going to hurt, fella. Your wife paid me to drop the job.
That's what I got to talk to you about, Madero. I think she wants to drop me, too.
Finley grabbed me by the arm, and you could tell he was scared. His jaw was shut tighter than a wall safe, and his Adam's apple rode up and down like a yo-yo. Evelyn wanted to compare notes with him on Sutro, but right now Finley was as friendly as a no-limit poker game. He hustled me out of the Jade and into a waiting cab. He wouldn't say anything because of the driver, so he sat in one corner, rubbing his hands and looking straight ahead. When we got to the office, Finley paid the bill, and we went up the ramp. Inside, he had a little trouble getting started, like a big family leaving on a picnic. And then he got his voice.
I'm in a bad spot, Madero. I need help.
Have you tried classified?
I'm trying you. I tell you, my wife's out to get me. She keeps telling me I'm crazy. She's trying to talk me into it.
A lot of wives feel that way, Finley. She'll get over it.
Yeah? Well, I'm Madero. She's trying to send me to an asylum. She and Sutro.
You got enough worries to start a peace conference. What brings Sutro back into the headlines?
I found a letter in Sheila's purse. Kane wanted $10,000 from Sheila to keep quiet about Sucho.
All right, quit crowding me with ghosts. So your wife had a past.
And she and Sucho have a future unless you help me, I tell you. I tell you, Sucho is behind the whole thing. He and my wife must know each other, and they're trying to get rid of me.
You're getting a complex, Finley. Slow down.
Well, you got to help me.
Well, who's going to help me? I got a murder rap to beat.
Oh, but I'll clear you, Madera. I'll clear you if you help me now.
You couldn't clear your own throat in an empty tunnel. What makes you 8 feet tall?
This gun in my hand.
Oh, stop pointing it, fella. You're too nervous to aim.
Well, you don't understand, Madera. I'm not pointing it at you. I'm giving it to you. This is the gun that killed Kane.
You were there when it happened?
No, but either my wife or Sucho was.
When did you dream that up?
An hour ago. I found it in my wife's closet. Two slugs are missing, and I got a feeling it killed Kane.
Send it to homicide. They'll let you know who did it by return mail.
I can't, Madero. I can't just yet. I don't know whether Sheila or Sucho did it. I got a feeling inside. You've got to find Sucho, or you'll end up killing me yet.
That's a prediction?
Wait a minute. Someone's coming down the hall. Hide the gun, Madero. They're after me now.
Yeah.
They got the light fuse.
Lay low. They're aiming for something bigger.
What are you going to do, Madero?
Just waiting for something to happen.
Madero. Madero. I guess it happened.
Somebody turned a flashlight in my eyes and then hit a four-bagger. If they hung around, they could have seen me do a couple of quick quivers a chorus girl would have been proud of. I laid there in the dark for a while. If you're going to look messy, a blackout isn't a bad place to do it. After a while, I tried to get up, but my stomach felt as empty as a horse lap at a funeral. I sprawled out again, and I tried to figure how a name like Pete Sutro could start so much pain. Then the lights went on. They should have stayed off, because Warcheck was breathing over me like a steam engine with a broken heart.
Hello, Madero. Does the light bother your eyes?
Yeah, Warcheck. Get out of it.
Get used to it. It's a lot stronger down at headquarters. Tell me about the gun on the floor.
I heard you were coming. I wanted to commit suicide.
You didn't try hard enough. Just got a phone tip that said you had the gun that killed Marty Kane. Hand it to me.
All right, copper, I'll make it easy for you. Finley left the gun here before somebody sapped me.
Mm-hmm. Who's somebody? Don't any of your friends have names?
Sure. Check with Finley. He was here when it happened.
It was dark, Madero. How did he see? With an electric eye?
I don't know. Maybe he smelled his wife's perfume. Look her up, too.
She's that interesting, huh?
Kane used to think so.
What do you mean?
He was blackmailing her.
Look, Madero, a grocery list is blackmail to you. I'll put you on the inside.
Finley found a letter in her purse. Kane wanted $10,000 to keep quiet about Sutro.
Finley told you all about it, huh?
He can't keep a family secret.
And the wife tumbled Kane to keep him quiet. Is that the idea?
Well, this is your good day, Warcheck. Find Sutro now, and you've licked the whole thing.
No, you find him, Madero, and we'll give you a reward.
You're too generous. What's the pitch?
Sutro's wanted for a payroll robbery in Detroit. He's been out of sight for a year now.
He hasn't been out of mind, though. Finley thinks his wife is carrying on a sideline with him.
Look, Madero, I talked to your boy, Finley. He's got enough dreams to start a mattress factory. I don't believe him. I don't believe you.
You don't believe the world is round. Take stock, Warcheck, and start learning.
Yeah, I will. I will. Let's see how much the fingerprints on this gun teach me. If you've got a story, I'll stay after school.
You'll still wear the dunce cap.
That's all right, Madero. There'll be a badge on it.
Warcheck wrapped the gun up in a handkerchief, and if it killed Marty Kane, I might as well start writing letters to the governor. The gun was a plant, but I had about as much chance of selling that to Warcheck as a pair of short pants to a reform school. Warcheck stood there and smiled, and then he walked out. Oh, there were a lot of questions again, like who sapped me, and did Finley really have a story? The more I thought about it, the more snarled it got, and then the phone rang. Yeah.
Hello, Johnny. This is Father Leahy. Are you still free?
Yeah, but I'm breathing hard. How'd you make out?
Fine, Johnny. I sold 10 raffle tickets.
What'd you find out?
Warcheck just got a teletype. Sutro pulled a payroll robbery in Detroit. They think Marty Kane helped him.
Well, that figures. What else?
Sutro and the doe are supposed to be somewhere in town.
Yeah, even the bloodhounds are worried. How does Sheila figure?
She and a girl named Evelyn were both in love with Sutro. But rumor has it that Sutro's favorite was Evelyn.
What about Finley?
Sheila must have got tired of sharecropping, so she settled for Finley. They both came in from Detroit about a year ago.
But, Father, it's still fuzzy. Marty Kane was blackmailing Sheila because of Sutro. There must be a tie.
Evelyn's asking the same question, and she thinks Sheila knows the answers. She's on her way to the Findlay place for a showdown.
Thanks, Father. I'll tag along and grab a seat on the sidelines.
It'll be a free-for-all if those two girls tangle.
Don't worry, Father. They won't get in my hair.
Don't be too sure. Samson had trouble with one girl.
When Father Leahy hung up, all the pieces began to fall into place. All but one. Where was Sutro? He was around somewhere, but it was like throwing a headlock on a shadow. I grabbed a cab out to the Stafford Arms, and when I got there, the doorman looked at me as if I'd just blown up an orphanage. I took the elevator and got off on the sixth floor. And then I leaned on the doorbell, and Sheila answered. She was wearing a pair of rose-colored lounging pajamas, and I've seen baked potatoes with lucid jackets. She must have been surprised, but she didn't blink an eyelash.
Are you pausing or opposing, Mr. Madero?
I'm looking for trap doors.
Oh, well, if you're going to look that way, come inside.
Yeah.
Now bring that gleam in your eye over to the fireplace. We'll warm it up a little.
It won't look good in company.
Why? Who's company?
Evelyn's a little late. She got tied up sharpening her claws.
Evelyn who?
Hold out, baby. She's got a better question than that.
Like what?
Like, where's Pete Sutro? That key sounds like a friend.
It's too early. That's probably my husband, Matt.
Oh, hello, Madero. I'm glad you're here. Somebody's been following me.
Oh, you're dreaming again, darling.
You see? What did I tell you? It wasn't a dream. That must be her.
Hello, Sheila. Remember me?
You must have the wrong place, lady.
That's the right idea. I want Pete Sutro back.
You want too much.
I'll grab anyway. I've come for Pete, Sheila.
You came too late. He's dead. Pete Sutro died 2 years ago in Detroit. Do you hear me? He's dead.
Not dead enough. You're lying, Sheila. Pete Sutro is standing right behind you.
What do you mean? That's my husband. That's Nat.
So you gave him another name and another face. But you can't give him another voice. That's Pete Sutro.
What are you talking about? What are you saying? I'm not Pete Sutro.
Don't you remember me, Pete? I'm Evelyn. Oh, what did they do to your face, darling?
My face? I was in an accident. It's hard to remember things.
Remember the payroll robbery, Pete? You were supposed to come back to me.
Payroll robbery? There was an accident. I was hurt. I can't remember anything else. It's so hard to think. Well, you were there, Sheila. What happened?
Go ahead, Sheila. Tell him what happened. Tell him that he's Pete Sutro. Tell him that you stole him from me. Tell him that you killed Marty Kane.
All right, Evelyn. I'll tell it to you first. It was a good campaign, but I'm voting you down.
Put away
now.
The gun. Pete won't stand for
it. He's henpecked now.
What are you doing, Sheila? You'll hurt him.
I'll try.
You shot him. You shot... Evelyn.
Pete. You remember me. She broke us up. For good. But you remembered me.
Yeah. I remembered. Evelyn. I'm beginning to remember a lot of things now.
Then forget them, Ned. Just you and me now. We're married.
You are. You married a guy named Nat Finley.
Stay away from me, Nat. Nat.
Try Pete. See how it sounds. Give me the gun, baby.
Let go.
You killed Evelyn.
Let go. You didn't need her.
Not anymore. I got the gun now.
No, please, Nat. Please.
Tell me it's a dream, baby. Tell me I'm crazy.
You are, Nat. You are.
Get out of my way.
I'm getting out of here.
You're not quick enough.
The gun's empty now.
Yeah. So's everything. I'm tired, Madero. Tired.
Hold out. It's going to be a long trip.
Yeah. I told you, Madero. Pete Sutro was going to kill me in the end.
Yeah. You talked yourself into it. Warchek got the whole story the next morning. It seems that Sutro and Kane were in a big robbery in Detroit. The plan was for Sutro to carry all the dough and meet Kane and Evelyn at their hideout. But Sutro got smashed up in an auto accident and never made it. Sutro's face had to be remodeled, and when he lost his memory, Sheila made her pitch. She promoted a wedding and cut herself in on half the stolen cash. Changed his name to Nat Finley and brought him out to San Francisco. Kane and Evelyn got wind that Sutro had taken off for the coast, so they followed. They couldn't find him, and for a year, Sheila and Sutro got along without a hitch. Then Sutro began hearing his real name in his own mind, and before Sheila could do anything, I'd already shown her husband's check to Kane. He recognized Sutro's handwriting right away, and so he started to blackmail Sheila. He didn't make any yardage because Sheila stopped him with a .38. And then she tried to convince her husband that he was crazy. Evelyn won in the last round when she recognized Sutro's voice at the Jade. It turned out that Sutro had been chasing himself until he caught himself. Well, Warchek asked only one question. How can a guy forget his own name? I don't know. A lot of hotels would like to know that, too.
Johnny Madero, Pier 23, starring Jack Webb as Johnny Madero, has been presented by the Mutual Network. Johnny Madero is written by Herb Margolis and Lou Morheim. Gail Gordon played Father Leahy. Bill Conrad played Inspector Warchek of Homicide. John Garfield played Nat Findlay. Others in the cast were Gene Rogers, Joan Banks. Original music was composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman, and the entire production was directed by Nat Wolf. Tony Lafrano.
This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Johnny Madero, Pier 23, on Tuned to Yesterday, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from the 18th of June, 1947. And that will do it for this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livnonier. Thanks for tuning in.